This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. And we've got some interesting, cool stuff for you today in our automotive news. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nered, and I am proud and happy to say that co-host Chris Teague is back with us. He was away from the microphone for a couple of weeks, but I'm glad he's back. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be back.
Well, it's always wonderful to have you. You are based in Maine. You write for a number of websites and other things, including Ford Authority, I think, and Driving Today, of course. And I, of course, am on the West Coast and writing for a variety of websites, including Forbes.com and Driving Today. And, well, you name it, quite a few, Auto Vitel, J.D. Power on occasion. So we're covering the industry, aren't we?
We are getting around for sure.
And I'm very excited that Chris has a new microphone today, so he sounds clearer than ever. I'm not sure how clear-headed he is, but he's sounding very clear through the microphone, so that's great. Our special guest is Ryan Negoti. He served as the interior designer on the all-new Ram 1500 TRX, their super truck. I had the chance to interview him at a recent TRX drive in and around Lake Tahoe, California. That was a blast. Great opportunity to drive that super truck, and he has insights on it, as you would expect from somebody who was so closely aligned with the project. In the car review segment, Chris, tell us what you'll be talking about.
The brand new 2021 Nissan Rogue.
And I don't want to tip the hand too much, but it's a darn nice vehicle, isn't it?
I enjoyed my week with it, yes, very much.
There you go. I will be also reviewing a compact utility, the Toyota RAV4 Prime. And let me tell you, I'd like to drag race you in the Rogue in that Prime. I think I would win.
I think so, too.
Yeah, okay. So there you go. Not because I'm such a great driver, but because it's got a lot more power and it's quicker. Before we do any of that, though, let's talk about some automotive news. And one thing that, well, let's just dive into the story. It's based on a J.D. Power survey that's done on a quarterly basis. And it looks at self-driving vehicles. It also looks at electric vehicles, but this is concentrating on self-driving vehicles. And the COVID-19 pandemic changed a lot of things. One thing it doesn't seem to have changed very much is the public's appetite for self-driving vehicles. They just don't seem to care about them all that much. We talk about them a lot here on the radio show. I know auto engineers are always talking about them, very excited about it. The general public kind of giving it, if not a collective yawn, maybe something even worse than that. This is based on findings from the J.D. Power 2020 Q3 Mobility Confidence Index study. And basically, in this study, consumers rate their, or they are rated, the index rates them, on a scale of 0 to 100, 100 being very strongly in favor of something, and 0 being dismissive and kind of not going there at all. For self-driving, the index has slipped. It wasn't too high to begin with, but it slipped to 34. So that indicates that most people just don't really care so much about this, or and maybe that's at best. Maybe they're actively against it. I mean, what's your take on that, Chris?
Yeah, you know, and I was going to say this, but the study actually validates it to a degree. You know, people's perceptions of self-driving cars largely depends on how they get around right now. So people who drive their own cars seem to be less enthusiastic about self-driving cars than are people who takes public transit. So I think that makes perfect sense. But, you know, one of the things that did come out is, you know, people are more hesitant to take public transit now and hesitant to be in public spaces with other people, at least in some parts of the world. But the industry, the self-driving car industry, if you want to call it that, hasn't made light year leaps forward in response to that. So there's still a lot of skepticism, and rightfully so.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what the experts say on their expert panel, and you know, truth be told, I'm one of the members of that expert panel, but there's a lot more experts than just me. It looks like the experts are saying it's even farther off than they thought in the first quarter of this year in terms of self-driving for a bunch of different type of aspects, ride hailing and taxi service, public transit that you just talked about, personal cars. It's just, they're looking at something close to being 10 years off, and that's a lot longer time frame than the industry would suggest to you.
I think so, and you know, very public self-driving car accidents have not helped their cause much either.
Yeah, very, very good point. Another question out there, and I think we were all excited. I haven't talked to you about it specifically, Chris, but you were probably excited about the launch of the new GMC Hummer EV. What's your take on that vehicle?
I think it looks incredible. I think it's not necessarily a Hummer in the sense of what people think of when they think of a Hummer, but that might not be the point. They've done a good job packaging it. I think the price is what it is, right? It's a rolling monument to technology, but it's got some really neat features, and I hope I get to drive it before too much more time goes by. Well, once it comes out, obviously.
Yeah, well, I hope so, too. I think it's a 2022 model year vehicle, so it's probably some distance in the future, but they're sure getting a lot of play on it. I mean, if you watched any of the World Series recently, the ads for the GMC Hummer EV were all over the World Series. And what it's pointing to is GM's Ultium Drive. This is a toolkit, kind of electric vehicle erector set that GM has put together because they expect to start assembling a whole bunch of vehicles, the Hummer being the first, out of this toolkit. Everything from sports cars to this wild and wacky and very out there big SUV truck kind of thing, off-road truck. It begs the question, is this going to be regarded by the public as cool? Or is this going to be looked at as, here's a big company, but it can't compete with Tesla? What's your take on that?
I think some of the players that'll come into the market between now and the Hummer or anything else that GM makes in that line are probably going to have a lot of say in that too. You know, people that I've talked to, both colleagues inside the industry and people outside, seem to be very excited about things like the Rivian truck and SUV that are coming, and they've got some big money backing to make it happen, and some other, you know, less I guess hardcore or less off-road electric vehicles like the Mustang Mach-E are going to kind of take up some of the oxygen in between here and there. So I don't think it's going to be Tesla's game, although it is theirs currently to lose.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And certainly, this is not a stock market show. But when you look at the market capitalization, that is what the stock market, what the market values these various companies at, and then look at their sales, it's all out of whack. GM sold about 7.7 million vehicles globally last year. Its market cap is $51.10 billion. That's what the market values it as being worth, $51 billion. Tesla sold 367,000 vehicles globally. So I say that's a far cry from 7.7 million. Its market cap, its market value is $391.73 billion. I mean, that's got to have, it's got me scratching my head as how that can be. Certainly that's not the only way you look at the value of a company, but it strikes me that there's a lot of speculative value or speculation going into the value assigned to Tesla versus what's going on with these brick and mortar companies like Ford and General Motors.
Yeah, and it's not just all intellectual property anymore either. So it will be interesting to see what happens to that value as the Mach-E comes out, as the F-150 electric truck comes out, as Rivian, you know, and so on. So I'll be watching.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't believe that electric cars are all that complicated to build. I mean, I think the public might look at them as being very high tech, but when you look at toy cars that you could assemble yourself, like when you were 10, they were always electric cars with a battery, right? Because that was so easy to put together. They didn't have you putting together from a kit an internal combustion engine vehicle. You're always putting together an electric car. So that's actually a fairly reasonable analogy for what's going on with electric car. They're not that hard to build, and they're not particularly high tech.
Well, again, you know, as the market gets more crowded, Tesla's going to have trouble continuing to break through. They built an attractive car with very attractive technology at the time, but people have had a lot of time to catch up. And while they still may be further ahead than many, there are a lot of deep pockets that are lining up to get in the game. So I can't wait, honestly. I think, you know, as much as I love gas engines and the the sounds and the sensations, I'm really, really interested in seeing where the next 5 years takes us in terms of internal combustion and battery electric vehicles.
Right, right. Well, we will talk about that, I think, later in the show. And we're going to have a bit of an example of that coming up in the next segment when we do our road test. You were driving the all-new Nissan Rogue for 2021. I was driving the Toyota RAV4 Prime, which has an electric drive component to it. It's the plug-in hybrid version of the RAV4. So that's coming up in the next segment. So with Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you. We're so glad you're with us, and stay with us for America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, and we're so glad he's back with us. This is Jack Nerad back with you, and road test time here on America on the Road, and it is a bit of a compact SUV face-off here. With some really interesting vehicles, with a lot of new tech in them. Chris, you were driving the all-new 2021 Nissan Rogue, and I was driving the all-new, or essentially all-new in this configuration, 2021 Toyota RAV4 Prime, their plug-in hybrid. Tell us a bit about the Rogue and what your take on it is.
I found it to be interesting. I thought it was, a very well put together move forward for the Rogue. So that's the summary. But the new Rogue, it's not yet quite on dealers' lots. I don't think it will be until later this month, or I'm sorry, we're almost in November now, so later in November. But brand new from the ground up. It's got a new look with a more grown-up kind of straight-sided style to it. It's definitely more, I would call it sophisticated than the outgoing model. The front end features split headlights and fog lights and LED running lights. So there's the kind of four-eyed look that we saw in the Nissan Juke, although not quite as awkward as it was then.
Inside, are you saying people who wear glasses are awkward? Is that what you're putting glasses out there? I'm wearing glasses.
And I'll find a way to slip in my height into this review as well.
Yeah, 6 feet tall. Chris Teague, 6 feet tall. Go on.
But inside, I'm going to tell you, I think they really knocked it out of the park. So I tested the SV trim, which is one step up from the base. I think it's the S trim. So not the top of the line model. It had cloth upholstery. It had no navigation, but it did have Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. It did have the Pro Pilot, I think it's called, safety system, as well as a few other options, but not many. The point is that this is not the most lavish model they offer, and I still found it to be as comfortable, if not more so, and more upscale feeling than many vehicles that have cost twice as much. And there are a few reasons for that. Is that Nissan has come up with some color contrasts for the inside. So instead of just a sea of black fabric and black plastic everywhere, this my SV trim had dark brown inserts in the doors and other color splashes that really made it look a lot more lively than it would otherwise. And I can't rave enough about the zero gravity seats. The front seats in the Rogue are a force to be reckoned with. Driving, it's very quiet, very refined, not fast because it doesn't have to be. It's a 181 horsepower, 2.5 liter four cylinder, and that's connected to a continuously variable transmission, which I think Nissan does as well as anyone. They've been pumping millions of dollars into the technology over the years, and they've come out with a transmission that is largely very tolerable and very refined in everyday use. So no complaints there. Fuel economy, you're going to talk about a hybrid SUV or a crossover. I'm talking about a crossover that dumped the hybrid from the model line, but that still gets 30 miles per to the gallon. So quite impressive. A few things that I wish they had done differently. More road noise comes in, more wind noise. So cabin insulation is definitely something that I would be concerned with. It was loud enough at one point for my now 4-year-old daughter. She just turned 4 last week.
Oh, happy birthday.
To wake up from a nap. She's not the deepest sleeper, but it was still kind of surprising to see that happen. And other than that, I think, you know, they've done a good job with it. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think they've done a marvelous job. You know, every all new vehicle, you expect it to be better than the one before, but I think this is incrementally better in pretty much every area. There's not one area where you go, well, they kind of fell down, or this is, I think the new Rogue just kind of hits it out of the park in a lot of different areas. I drove one that was very high zoot. It was the Platinum Edition. It had every bell and whistle on it. And it is every bit a competitor, or could be a competitor, for luxury vehicles of the same size. It just has all everything you'd want in terms of that. Leather interior, high zoot looking, great infotainment system, and the drivability that you'd want too, and the refinement, even though it has a CVT, which neither you nor I are typically fans of. So I think they've done a really good job with this vehicle. And I think, and they've also priced it very aggressively, which means low. They're out for blood with this thing. This is the biggest seller in the Nissan line, and they really want to do a job with it.
I agree. And, the SV, I think, prices in right under $30,000, even with the ProPilot Assist package. And so it's a winner. I would definitely recommend it. I have not driven the newest RAV4, but I have driven the CRV, and I think the Rogue is competitive by more than just a little bit. So good job, Nissan.
Yeah, I think they are doing a marvelous job. And like you say, we're in compact SUV land this week in our road test segment. I was driving the much anticipated Toyota RAV4 Prime. And Prime means it's a plug-in hybrid. That is their little shorthand for plug-in hybrid. And not only is this the most fuel-efficient RAV4 ever, which you might expect, and has an estimated 90 mpg and little e, but it also is the most powerful and quickest RAV4 ever. And that's a pretty nice combination. I mean, this thing will do 0 to 60 in a reported 5.8 seconds. I didn't do it in my driveway, but I guess that's true. It feels very, very lively, let's put it that way. It is available in top model grades, SE and XSE, so you can kind of option it the way you want it. And it has good stuff like a color head-up display. That's a first in a RAV4, so I like that. And it feels very premium. Of course, it's a RAV4, and you're going to see RAV4s everywhere. It's one of the most popular vehicles, non-pickups, out there on the road, so you're going to see that profile a lot. But once you're inside, and I wouldn't have said this about previous RAV4s probably, it feels pretty premium. It feels much more like a luxury vehicle. I think the fact that they finally sorted out their infotainment thing and specified Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, as opposed to putting the nicks on that as they had done, was a wise move in that. And of course, plug-in hybrid gives you about 40 miles of electric-only driving before you need to resort to that filthy internal combustion engine. I'm saying that facetiously, I hope, because they're darn clean these days. But I think it's a really good advantage. And, you get 83 more horsepower from this kind of situation than you had over the RAV4 hybrid, which has very good drivability in and of itself.
Yeah, I think the power and the instant torque is a very welcome sort of byproduct of the hybrid system. But Toyota's gone all in on hybrids, and they've done a great job with them. So I can't wait to get behind the wheel. It's very popular both on dealers' lots and in the press fleet, it appears.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely true. Like I say, it has premium features, and it also has, of course, the Toyota Safety Sense. So a lot of driver aids and safety features as well that are standard equipment. It isn't the cheapest compact SUV in the marketplace, over $30,000 typically equipped. But what you're getting in this thing is a quasi-luxury compact SUV that has all the environmental benefits of being a plug-in hybrid and has plus kind of drivability. It's much more fun to drive than the typical RAV4, which is pretty fun to drive in and of itself.
Agreed.
So that is our sum up. Two winners here, the 2021 Nissan Rogue, certainly very price competitive and much better looking than before. Upscale interior, we like it. And Toyota RAV4 Prime, great drivability, fast, and incredible fuel economy. So a lot to like, and this segment is just getting hotter and hotter. When we come back, we will be taking listener questions, not only taking them, but probably answering a few of them. So with Chris Teague, this is Jack Neared. Stay with us for that right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Neared back with you, and it is the segment in which we take your listener questions, answer them, and then move on about our business as if nothing further had happened. We love your listener questions, and we'd love to take them. So if you want, just send them along to editor@drivingtoday.com. That's editor@drivingtoday.com, and we'll try to answer your question on an upcoming show. And let me ask a question that came in recently from a listener, and I think it's quite a good one, actually. Is now the time to consider buying an electric car? We talk a lot about them. We've talked about them in this show itself. What's your take on that, Chris?
I think it depends on a couple of things. The first is, what kind of electric car do you want? Are you fine with a Tesla? Are you fine with an older GM electric car, used GM electric car? If so, then yes, by all means, go ahead. But if you are someone who would like to look for an electric car from a major manufacturer, Ford's Mach-E will be hitting dealers' lots later this year. You know, next year we'll probably see Rivian, and the year after that. We just talked earlier about the Hummer. But if you're not desperate for an electric car, I think the next 12 to 14 months is going to be kind of your golden egg to start shopping, because there'll be a lot more choice then, and you may prefer something that has the backing of a major manufacturer like Ford, as opposed to Tesla, though a lot of people do prefer that. So I think it depends on when or how desperate you are for a car and what kind you like. Now, for me, I live in Maine. An electric car, I would not buy one right now, because going into winter is probably not the best time to try to install a charger or find chargers, and cold weather can do weird things to range. So for me, the answer is no, at least until next year, but it really depends on what you're shopping for.
I think that's a great answer. What's coming up is, I think, as you mentioned, a lot of Easter eggs in terms of new vehicles coming into the market that are all electric, and some, like we just talked about in a previous segment, the RAV4 Prime, that is a plug-in hybrid that has a lot of electric range and also gives you the ability to use that gasoline engine if you need to. I think we're going to see probably as many as 50 new electric vehicles over the course of the next 2 years. So it might be just a little bit early, I think, to wade into the electric market right now. I think what we're seeing from Tesla, they're good vehicles. We certainly like them, but they're getting a little bit longer in the tooth. There hasn't been a ton of innovation from Tesla recently. And I think it'll be interesting to see what the mainstream manufacturers come up with as competitors. We're seeing that from, say, Polestar, from Volvo's Polestar that's coming down the road, and certainly the Hummer EV that we talked about even earlier in the show. So we're going to see a lot of cool all-electric vehicles coming up, and, you know, I might hang on to my money for a little bit longer if I'm looking for an EV.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. Well, good. We try to be reasonable around here. We don't often achieve that, but we do our best. Let me ask you one more quick question here. What do you think it means if your steering wheel shakes as you drive? Is it something that you should be concerned about?
Well, it's certainly not a normal thing. Your car is not designed to have a steering wheel that shakes. How much you should be worried about it depends on the actual problem, but the issue there is that it could be one of many, many things. So maybe the cheapest or the easiest fixed items that could be causing it is just an unbalanced tire. So if one of the weights in your tire has fallen off, or if you hit a pothole and cause some issues with the balance in your tire, that could be causing, especially the front tires, your steering wheel to shake. Your wheels could be out of alignment. You know, that happens here in Maine a lot. People slide around and hit curbs in the winter and potholes and that sort of thing. A couple of the more serious things that, and I say serious because of the costs involved, are wheel bearings. Once they start to go bad, you know, those are just a series of small metal balls in a frame that spin around, you know, when your wheels are turning. Once those start to go bad, they can cause issues. Worn suspension parts or steering problems, as well as your brakes. So if you put on your brakes and the steering wheel starts shaking, that could indicate something like a warped rotor or an unevenly worn brake pad. So really worth getting a diagnostic done, because it could be a $10 fix or it could be a $1,000 fix, depending on what the issue is.
Right. It just shouldn't happen. You've identified a lot of possible causes of this, and they are many. Some of it depends on where it's shaking. Is it shaking when you're going just straight down the road, or is it shaking when you're turning? Is it shaking when you're braking? Those are some tips to what could be wrong, but all of that is good advice, and getting good professional advice, you know, checking those wheel bearings. These days, I think most wheel bearings are sealed, so you can't lubricate them. You just have to live with whether they're going to live the life of your car or not. But if they fail, that's a major, major problem that needs to be fixed. So those are our listener questions for this week. Our thanks to Chris Teague for helping with that. Really good answers from him. And in the next segment, we will be interviewing Ryan Nagode. He is the interior designer on the very exciting Ram 1500 TRX, their super truck with 702 horsepower. So we'll get his insight on putting together an interior that is worthy of that great truck. Stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. It's Jack Nerad with you, and we are staring out at an off-road course that I'm amazed I was able to negotiate. Actually, it wasn't me. It was the Ram 1500 TRX that negotiated it. And with me is Ryan Nagode. He is with Ram Truck. He is a very talented designer with Ram Truck, and I'd love to talk to you about it. Let's talk about the interior first of the Ram 1500 TRX.
Sounds good, Jack. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be out here. You know, like you said, we're in an awesome motorsports park, really stretching the legs of the new 2021 Ram TRX. Happy to be a part of the team. You know, for us, it was all about really trying to pick up, create, design, engineer a halo product for this brand. Really the top dog, apex predator, as we say,
right?
For this vehicle, and just really a blend. I think it's trying to find this fine balance between, you know, some of the luxury, some of the performance cues on the interior, knowing that for some people, this could become a daily driver for them. You know, it's a status symbol.
Well,
right?
And, you know, this truck is an animal. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's got incredible horsepower, incredible capabilities, incredible off-road capabilities, many of which I have tested already here today. Thanks so much. And at the same time, you just mentioned it, daily driver. This is something that might be somebody's primary vehicle.
Sure.
And the interior is critical to that. Talk a bit about the overall philosophy.
Yeah, our Ram 1500 lineup, we debuted in 2019, I think a well-rounded truck. It has capability baked into it, technology baked into it, a ton of space. The rear cabin, I think a lot of people jump in the rear seat. They recline those rear seats and they forget they're in a truck, right? It's a great road tripping vehicle, and we've started with that and just added all of this performance attributes, but we didn't lose any of the creature comforts. All the TRXs come with a 12-inch Uconnect 4C touchscreen, 7-inch cluster. Really, you know, you can get the vehicle with our Natura Plus premium leather in the interiors, Alcantara inserts, you know, reclined seats on the rear of the truck as well, right? So you really are not compromising on any of those touch points if you're a customer that says, you know what, the TRX is for me.
Right. And you have various levels, right? I mean, you can take it from, you know, kind of mild, but everyday inside, to,
correct,
you know, right up through the whole luxury thing.
Yeah, a point of the truck and in the design phase was we know there's customers out there that just are going to want the powertrain. They're going to want the capability. They don't want any of the frills, right? So we kind of made those choices. You know, it's a premium leather and premium vinyl and cloth interior. It's got soft touch points. So when you're thrashing around, you're banging your legs against, you know, you're landing on some soft stuff, right? That's important.
Yeah. And but, you're not embarrassed by that interior. You love that interior,
mm-hmm,
but,
correct,
you know, there's up
we
from
know
there.
That this truck and the capabilities of a customer, you know, this is maybe a toy within their stable, right? And if this truck can become something that they could gingerly use it on the highway, and then when they need to get into it, they got the 702 horsepower sitting at their feet.
Right. I think that's one of the revelations of driving this thing, is how easy it is to drive in everyday situations. You know, maybe a little bit of a handful to park, but you have a lot of assists to make,
correct,
that happen. But otherwise, comfortable, quiet, nimble, does all the kind of things you'd want around town, and at the same time, you have that 700 horsepower under your,
yeah,
right foot.
And that's something with the trucks in general we've kind of come to realize and doing, you know, talking to customers, they don't want to, just because of having a truck, they don't want to get rid of some of that stuff. You know, we brought air suspension to the truck market and just the ability to on the highway coast, you know, and like I said, it becomes a driver's long haul type of daily driver commuter. But I often say, you know, this truck is sort of a Jekyll and Hyde type of characteristic to it, you know, right? Because it can show both faces, and you love them both ways.
Yeah, at the same time, the Hyde is not really all that terrifying, right?
Correct.
I mean,
correct.
It's not beating you up, correct, even when it's doing some pretty amazing stuff off-road.
Yeah, we have, you know, the TRX seats are a little bit more bolstered, but they allow, I think, a wide range of customers to get in the vehicle. They don't feel like they're getting into maybe a sports car that just, it's too tight to fit in. I think that's the beauty. And I know I've heard a lot of people that have driven the truck that it feels small a little bit. You know, it feels, it gives a good command of the road,
right,
I think, feel to it. So it's a great product. We're happy to...
Let's talk about some of the interior features that you're really excited about. You know, you mentioned the 12-inch touchscreen, which is great. It's,
correct.
You know, among the best touchscreens of any type of vehicle, not just a truck vehicle, but just any type. But talk a bit about some of the things you're really happy with.
Yeah, I love how the team, we were able to bring in a center console shifter to the truck. I know there's been some people that have been clamoring for that in our 1500 lineup. And there's pros and cons with that. We found a good way to maximize storage space, give you functionality. I love the ability to give at your fingertips the drive modes. This truck has 8 drive modes plus valet, and that allows the truck to kind of have this different personality, because you can throw it in auto, cruise on the highway, and then just with the touch of the fingertips, you don't even need to get into the screens. You can get to the drive modes, which I think is nice. Because sometimes the technology is a little much at first, maybe for some. And I think that's a nice duality that we often have, is we love our redundant controls. So not everything has to be in the screen. We have some hard controls. I love the steering wheel. The steering wheel has a great feel to it, a flat bottom feel. Some of the models have our suede actually on the steering wheel itself too, which give you a little bit more grip. And as well, the paddles that we were able to put on there. Just some of these touch points, they're real metal. You feel like it's not going to break. You know, it's sort of an extension of this truck, and everything needs to work together to make it really the best possible vehicle out there.
Yeah. There are a lot of features that are accessible either on the touch screen or with hard buttons. There's just a lot of stuff, right?
Correct.
So that's got to be a challenge, shall we say, as you're engineering the interior, as you're designing the interior. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, our Uconnect system is, you know, a hallmark of our technology. I think we're building upon a system that just is all inherently easy to use to begin with.
Yeah, correct.
And so when we talked about bringing in drive modes, performance pages to this vehicle, we said, well, we got to do it in the same way that the rest of the system works. Larger buttons on the screens, you know, not getting to small buttons where you can imagine you're out here possibly, you know, off-roading with this thing and you're jumping up and down trying to hit a small button. So that's really, you know, I think a hallmark to the system. The graphics are clear, easy to see. We use color coding to kind of denote, all right, when you're in the more performance end of it, you're going to be in the red realm, and then maybe elements that are in Baja are going to be in the brown mode. So you kind of understand what's going on with the system, and I think that's just it's key. It's you don't want something to be intimidated using the system, because this is all at the end of the day what we're doing on the interior, giving them, you know, a place to call home and really truly feel comfortable to be able to get out there and use this truck to the best of its ability.
And you're letting people know that they're in something special. I mean, I like the number plate, mm-hmm, essentially on it that has the VIN. And yeah, tell our listeners a bit about that and what the thinking was there.
We love the details. We think that is really what really sets certain manufacturers apart from each other. It's that almost as if you were buying something handcrafted, handmade for you, and that's the kind of feeling that we love to pour into the interiors. And that spec plate, for instance, it's metal, it got a stamped piece on top, and it's got the information of the powertrain, some figures like boost pressure, but then on top of that we add the VIN. And it's just, again, it's nothing that it's not adding horsepower to the truck, right? But it is visually tying you into that vehicle, I think, a little bit more than just something that looks run-of-the-mill and just normal in that sense. So details like that, we love little Easter eggs that we throw into the interior and exterior. I'll let most of those people usually find those out, but that some of the stuff like that is neat. And I love when people have had the vehicle, any of our vehicles, for months, and they're like, oh, I just found this, you know, and that's kind of neat, right? And I think, it, again, it makes you feel like maybe more attached to the product. And let's face it, this, you know, besides a house and some other items, you know, a car payment is pretty substantial. And just
and this
buying,
one will be fairly substantial.
Yeah. I think. Just, and just buying a vehicle in general. And so you want to make sure people feel value. And I think some of those details really help to portray that.
Yeah. Let's go back to the shift lever, right? I mean, the typical 1500 has the rotary knob shift selector.
Correct.
Works fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got to believe it's expensive to re-engineer that or, you know, change that system. For this truck, just talk a bit about that and how how persuasive. I don't know who was persuasive, but somebody had to be persuasive to get that to happen.
Well, and I think we do a good job of listening to the customer feedback. You know, in some cases, we always don't react right away to that. Take it in, kind of understand what they're after, you know, what they're looking for. They might be saying one thing, but actually meaning something else. And in the instance of the shifter, I think you find a lot of people at first, you know, maybe some gripes, but then realize that you were able to get more storage space, more flexibility. And so maybe some of those, maybe I think people that felt they really needed a regular shifter were kind of like, okay. So, and so that's, we've stayed pretty true to leaving that in the 1500 because we feel the storage space and everything there is vast. Now looking at this truck, we said, okay, well, a hallmark of this truck is the performance end of it. And to be able to grab something that you know this is shifting it in to all the, you know, the eight gears, 702, you know, 650 foot-pounds of torque, you need something substantial.
And a lot of times you want to grab a gear manually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for this kind of
and
vehicle.
The ability to either the paddles do it manually or throw the shifter into manual mode and shift through the gears. I think even for a lot of people, they just like love resting their hand on that thing when they're driving. Sort of just, you know, the vehicle is wide and you tend to lean towards the center, and it's just a nice place to kind of rest. But I think visually, it's also just a nice thing when you peek in, you know that this is something a little bit more unique and special because the rest of the lineup doesn't have it. I think that also will make this vehicle be a little bit special.
Right. Well, it's certainly special from the exterior design point of view, and it dates back to a concept vehicle, I guess you did in 2016 or mm-hmm. around there. Tell me the philosophy of trying, do you try, number one, to match up the interior with the exterior, or, you know, how does that sort out?
We love to have them be complements to each other. I know, you know, how we interact at the office is we're in constant contact with like my counterpart who handles the exteriors. And so, you know, we're always in each other's sort of reviews, listening in the background. Because yes, you don't want a vehicle to appear one way in the exterior, maybe think you're getting something, and then you get on the interior and it's something completely different. They complement each other in that sense. And I know on the interior for us, we had to live up to what the exterior and the engineering even were portraying with this vehicle, that we had to have something special. So it's a big part of the process. It is two different teams working on it, but then it's the coordination of the management and everyone, again, just the communication to kind of keep it all on track and make it feel unified.
Was there ever a inclination to make this a more bare bones kind of vehicle, you know, a scat pack kind of vehicle, if you will, or something like that, where it strictly concentrates on performance and you don't go the extra mile in the interior? Was that part of the consideration?
I think with us coming and dropping the truck, you know, now we've had the time to kind of sit back and look at what you know, other manufacturers have been doing out there with just trucks in general. And I think we looked at just even how the sales of our own trucks are. And I think it for some people that is what they want to do. And I think there's a small portion of the population that's the way they would want to have it. But I think majority of the vehicle owners, the truck owners, and especially owners that we see for this truck There is sort of an expectation now that these trucks come with a little bit of these creature comforts.
Yeah.
And done in a smart way, right? So I think we thought about that, but we said, you know what, we're going to lose out on an opportunity here. And again, this is our apex of the lineup. This is our top dog. And so we want to make sure that if someone's buying that, they feel that this is everything what the brand is about.
Well, and this is a bragging rights mm-hmm. vehicle, right? I mean, this is the vehicle you pull up wherever you're pulling it up.
Yeah.
Pick a place. And people gather around, and then you show them the cool stuff you've got and how yeah. cool it is. And it's not just the exterior stuff. It's not just under the hood.
Yeah.
It is also inside. So I think that went the right direction.
Well, yes. I love when people they think of one thing, and then they open the door, and they're blown away. Then they forget that they're in a truck. I think that's there's nothing wrong with that. That's good.
Right, yeah. Well, this is such a good basic package to begin with, although I guess significantly parts of it were re-engineered from the frame up, mm-hmm. really. Suspension re-engineered, a lot of
Correct.
Engineering going
Correct.
On. Widened significantly,
yep.
all kinds of stuff. Yet you're building off a great package to begin with. Package that, frankly, the NERAD family loves. I mean, I always pick the Ram 1500 for our family outings.
Sure,
you
sure.
know, if we're gonna drive 2 or 3 hours,
yeah.
Hey, give us that truck,
of
and
course.
It's the most one of the most comfortable vehicles, not just truck.
Yeah, you forget there's a bed behind there,
yeah,
right? You
know? Yeah, exactly. I mean, that it becomes largely immaterial.
Yes, I agree.
So cool stuff. What do you think the listener should know about this vehicle that they probably don't know now?
I think the key for us is getting people in the trucks, experiencing. There's so much packed into it, I think, is the key there. And I would say most people will think that it cannot be a daily driver. And I think that is the heart of what this truck is about, is it can do both things. We know that there's tough decisions out there, and in some cases you gotta condense down to one vehicle, possibly in a family establishment. And I think this truck shows you what this brand is about. We're there listening to consumers, and then hopefully responding with products that, you know, meet and exceed their expectations.
Yeah. Well, Ryan Negotti, thanks so much for speaking with us. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
A lot of insights. Thanks so much. And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Ryan Negotti. He is the interior designer, as you heard, on the Ram 1500 TRX. I almost forgot the name of the vehicle he was doing the interior design on, but it's the Ram 1500 TRX. Very exciting vehicle at that. I want to thank Chris Teague for being with us. It's always a pleasure to have him on the show as the co-host, and I hope he'll be with us week after week after week going forward. So, Chris, thanks for being with us.
I hope to join you from now on and for the rest of our lives as well, and I hope everyone else is willing to make that commitment to us as well. But the best thing you could do to get there with us is to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get them, whether it's Spotify or Apple Music or Apple Podcasts, I should say. And leave us a review, like our podcast and subscribe, or don't like our podcast and subscribe. Every little bit helps us keep growing.
Right. And we want to keep growing. I'm not getting any taller. I am getting a bit wider, but I'm going to try and work on that. I would also like to recommend, on a completely different subject, and I have not written a diet book, but actually more of a self-help book called The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. And I recommend that book to you as the author, because the tenets in it have helped me through the years, and I think they'll help you. So look for that at Apple Books and Amazon and Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold, typically online. It's in some bookstores as well. I have to thank you for tuning in and listening to America on the Road. Join us again right here next time for another edition of America on the Road.